There are 1.5 million black men missing from daily life in the United States, in large part because of incarceration and early death. That's the conclusion of a new analysis of census data from the New York Times.
That means that nationwide, for every 100 black women in daily life, there are only 83 black men. Meanwhile, almost no gap for white men and women, with 99 white men for every 100 white women.
And the absence of black men is much more pronounced in certain areas of the country than others. One of those places is in Wisconsin's largest city. There are 14,000 black men missing from daily life in Milwaukee. Men only account for 42% of the city's black population of about 24,000, 240,000 rather.
Right now we're joined by the author of the New York Times analysis, Justin Wolfers. He's a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics and a professor of economics and public policy at the University of Michigan. Later we'll take a closer look at Milwaukee, specifically with the director of the Institute for Intercultural Research at UW-Milwaukee. Justin Wolfers, welcome to Central Time.
A pleasure to be here, Rob.
So what does this mean? We gave some of the basics there, that 1.5 million black men are missing from daily life.
So every 10 years, the Census Bureau goes out and counts how many people they find in houses around the country. And they found, we're looking at prime age people, age 25 to 54, and among African Americans, they found 1.5 million fewer men than women. We know where some of them are. About 600,000 of them are in prison, obviously not a part of their communities. And then there's something of a puzzle as to where the rest are. Now, we also know some number of them are died early. This is a cohort who lived through the, many didn't live through the HIV epidemic, which had a particularly strong impact on the black population, and particularly among black men. And also this group who, for whom homicide rates are incredibly high. It's a big part of, I think, the mortality story here. The homicide rate has fallen a bit over the past decade or so, but still it's something that has a very disproportionate effect on African-American men.
And so whatever the cause is, if we go to communities today, there are often substantially more black women in that age range than black men.
Yeah, and I think the consequences of this are absolutely fascinating, which is how is it these communities adapt? So, it's not just the men who are in prison or who died early who suffer as a result of this. There are whole communities left behind that are changed. For many women, this probably means that if they're looking to partner within their community and within their racial or ethnic group, that they're not finding a lot of partners. And we do see a lot of women instead striking out alone. Starting their own household without a partner, often having children nonetheless. For the men who are left behind in the communities, you look at a city like Ferguson, there are, for every 100 black women, there are 60 black men, the most imbalanced city, large city in the country. And you think about how that must reshape life for both men and women in a community like that.
You mentioned Ferguson as a pocket. Are there a lot of pockets in the country where this imbalance is particularly striking?
Across the country, for every 100 black women, there's only 83 black men, which sort of says that just about everywhere you look, it's pretty darn striking. I mean, that in itself is an amazing statistic. There are parts of the country where there's no such imbalance. So if you head to the West Coast, in fact, you see basically parity and sometimes even a few more African-American men than women. The areas where we see the greatest imbalance, the South, people may not be surprised to hear that, the Midwest, and also the big urban centers in the Northeast.
You mentioned the difference in California. Is there some internal migration? Is that part of the story here? Is that part maybe of the missing number?
The truth is we're not really sure. It's easy enough to figure out, and when I say it's easy enough, it actually turns out to be quite difficult, but it's easy enough to figure out where these men are missing. Trying to figure out a precise story as to why is a lot harder. I have hypotheses. I'm sure you do, and I'm sure your listeners do too. But I wouldn't want to suggest I've got any great confidence as to what's going on.
Well, is there a next step in research then, where we try to figure out more thoroughly the causes for this this distinction, this difference?
I think the two important consequences for research are, exactly as you say, figuring out the cause, and obviously one big part of it is the mass incarceration of African-American men. Another big part has something to do with the very grim circumstances that a lot of families find themselves in when they're in urban poverty. but also trying to think about what the consequences of this are. For instance, there's a lot of talk about, particularly among conservatives, about problems with the African-American family, and there's not a lot of marrying going on. Well, you know what, if there's not a lot of fellas, that might explain why there's not a lot of marrying going on. And I suspect that there's quite a lot that we see that may be explained by this rather remarkable demographic imbalance.
Talking to Justin Wolfers of the University of Michigan about his census data analysis, finding 1.5 million black men missing in the country for reasons including mortality rates, incarceration rates, and some mysteries along the way there. Justin, let's get in some more to the consequences. And you mentioned the marriage and dating market and what that's doing to families. So what does that look like from the perspective of the women and men? Get into that a little more, if you would, please.
Sure. Let's go to a town like Ferguson. Imagine, think about 100 women, and there's 60 men. Well, it may be that 20 of the women have married 20 of the men. So then we're left with 80 women, 80 single women, and 40 single men. That's an unbelievable ratio. And, you know, it's going to have a ton of effects. So for one of the reasons, think about standard markers of success, things like getting a job. One of the reasons that we go out and hit these standard markers of success, and here I'm channeling Kerwin Charles, who's an excellent economist on this at the University of Chicago, is that it helps us find a mate. But for the men in Ferguson, there's no such market pressure. In fact, they're scarce. They could find another girlfriend tomorrow. And so there's the possibility that, in fact, this helps explain why some groups of men are less engaged in the labor force or are leading less conventional lives and not ticking off the traditional markers of success. They don't really need to in order to be attractive on the marriage market.
Well, then let's look to the next generation. Do you look at, say, young black men being raised in these communities where there's this huge gap? Is that something we should be looking at when we're trying to evaluate the consequences?
For sure, there's a lot of concern out there about the consequences of fatherlessness or about not having a father present. And that certainly is overwhelming. It's a very important trend in many of these communities where, you know, if many of the prime-aged men are in prison, many of them are the dads as well. You know, we need to be a little bit careful here. It's not necessarily the case that that family would be better off if they forced dad to go back and live with mum. Dad may well be in prison for a range of reasons, which some of which maybe wouldn't make him an ideal father figure. So I think what we have is it's not necessarily that you want to push couples back together. My guess is mum is probably making some pretty good choices given the circumstances she's in. Maybe you want to think about what those circumstances are instead. But there is generally, I think, there is this shortage of father figures, and the consequences of that for definitions of masculinity and for the types of life choices those kids make, I think, are potentially quite important.
Right, even if we're not talking about a father per se, father figures or mentors or role models in a community, much less the family.
Absolutely.
So other consequences, I think you pointed to in your research, that's a lot of voters not present in a community.
Yes. The men who are in jail, of course, if it's a felony, they're not voting again. So it's not just they're not voting while they're in prison, they're not voting when they get out. The men who have died, of course, they're not voting. And so it actually turns out to be a substantial reduction in the number of African Americans who are eligible to vote. And then there's a rich irony in all of this, which is if you put a prison in a community, we actually count all the prisoners as living in that community. And that counts for congressional apportionment, which means that if you happen to live in a community that has a prison, there'll be a smallish number of free citizens and a relatively large number of incarcerated people who make up the electorate. And, of course, those in jail can't vote. And so it actually distorts our democracy as well.
So this distinction we're talking about, the missing black men in communities, is this something new in recent census evidence, or is this something that has roots deeper back in time?
It has much deeper roots. You know, it's something that when we discovered, the New York Times ran it in the front page of the newspaper, but there's no sense in which this is news. The rough proportions of missing men have been about the same now for 50 years. Now, what underlay that was different. So today, it's largely driven, or a large part of it reflects incarceration and the incarceration boom. You go back 50 years ago, that was before the incarceration boom. And so a lot more of it back then was likely mortality. So the depressing way of saying this is that life got somewhat better for African-American men over the last 50 years in the sense that their higher death rates normalized a little bit, but all of those gains were offset by higher incarceration rates instead.
Justin, thanks for joining us today.
A pleasure.
That's Justin Wolfers, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He did a census data analysis for the New York Times, concluding that there are 1.5 million black men missing from daily life in the United States.
We just spoke with an economist who analyzed census data to find that mainly due to incarceration and early death, there are 1.5 million black men missing from daily life in the United States. That means that for every 100 black women, there are only 83 black men.
Closer to home, according to that same data, Milwaukee is one of the U.S. cities with the largest number of missing black men at 14,000. That means only 42% of Milwaukee's black population, of about 240,000 people, are men. Here with us now to talk about how that affects Milwaukee's communities is Gary Williams. He's an associate professor of educational policy and community studies at UW-Milwaukee, and he's director of the Institute for Intercultural Research. Gary, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So we just heard some general numbers around the country. How does this absence, these missing men, how does this affect Milwaukee communities?
Well, in several different areas, a couple of which your previous speaker alluded to. Voting, one area that your previous speaker made reference of, those 14,000 could swing a vote, and that's critically important to their to them being absent from the community. You're talking about employment, again, 14,000 men who are not part of the workforce and contributing and paying taxes and paying the cost of education for themselves and their children. Role models in the community, again, they're absent. They're not there, whether they're part of a family or role models who support children and other members of our community. So there are several areas that are critically important to this number of 14,000 missing from Milwaukee.
Let's pick up that point of role models. You work with a mentoring program for African-American boys in Milwaukee. When you talk to them about their families, their support systems, how often are men missing from the picture?
Men are missing more often than we would like, especially positive male role models in their lives. And that's where the mentoring program is important. We have a tiered mentoring program that we've proposed putting in place, and it includes African-American alums of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, for example, working with college African-American males, and those college students in turn working with the K-12 population of African-American males. So it's tiered, and at each tier, we provide models for the next level.
Do you have a story from the kids that you've worked with in this program about how this can impact their lives?
Oh, absolutely. These kids are real clear about their needs. A couple of years ago, we talked with a group of them and asked point blank, what do you need from us? What would it take to ensure your success? And those kids mentioned to us, and these were kids from elementary through seniors in high school, they made it clear that parenting was important to them, that individuals from the black community, as they said, stepping up and supporting them was important. Jobs and education, all these things were important to these kids.
So these numbers we're talking about, missing black men, 14,000 fewer black men than women, I gather. This is a big difference, but are people conscious of this in their daily lives, or is this just part of the scenery?
I think they're very conscious of it, and as a result of that, you see efforts devoted towards trying to turn that around. You talk about organizations like the Social Development Commission and social organizations like 100 Black Men and Running Rebels, and they serve different populations. Social Development Commission working with people in poverty, 100 Black Men mentoring black men, black males, and then, of course, a program like Running Rebels for Youth. So they're all well aware of this problem and working together in order to address it.
Now, what about the economy as part of the problem here? Are there enough jobs, if we had all these men in the community, are there enough jobs to keep them there?
There are jobs that may not necessarily be in Milwaukee, in the city of Milwaukee. The jobs tend to be in the outlying areas. So, of course, transportation becomes an issue. And then that creates a whole set of problems because the poor public transportation system in the city of Milwaukee will not get them to the jobs in the suburbs and in Waukesha County and other places. Some of these individuals, because of their past records, may not have driver's license. Again, access to those jobs. And then, of course, income. Not having the financial resources to purchase a vehicle, let alone provide maintenance on a vehicle. So there are a lot of problems, many of which could be addressed by creating more jobs and opportunities, as well as providing training and education for those black males.
We're talking to Gary Williams from the UW-Milwaukee, looking at some national census data showing missing black men, 1.5 million nationwide, a shortage of them, many incarcerated, some because of early mortality rates, some, as our previous guest said, it's still a mystery. Focusing on Milwaukee, the largest number of these missing black men at about 14,000, talking about the causes and consequences of that. Gary, I wanted to look at how this might look to women in Milwaukee's black communities. How does this affect their lives?
Well, this is an age-old problem in Milwaukee, and I'm sure in other cities. The disproportionate number of, for example, you talk about a university college women who anticipate graduating and moving on with their lives and not finding mates at that level. And so this is something we've known about for some time. It has not created a problem in terms of those women crossing the racial ethnic line in order to marry, intermarrying. So that's one solution. There are others who, in this generation of women, are holding off on marriage till later on in life. And as we know, you know, and this is where some people seem to be confused, there are black men in college. Half of black men do go to college. The problem is many of them are not graduating at a rate comparable to black women. So there are some of this that we've been aware of for some time and have addressed in various ways.
Well, we touched a little bit on part of the solutions you're working on, mentoring for younger black men, for black boys who don't have the role models. Are there solutions to evening out these numbers, to keeping black men in their community? What would you like to see change?
Well, again, I go back to jobs and education. And I go back to job creation, job training, and education as a key to employing these individuals, dissuading them from other avenues that might lead to incarceration or death. I think that the employment is critically important. And this is not new. The county, the city must work together in order to create jobs, provide training, and educate black males.
Now, we've seen an outbreak of gun violence in Milwaukee this year, actually. We've talked about that a fair amount on the show, including with Mayor Barrett. Is this part of the problem, trying to prevent this kind of violent crime in the city? And I know it's a huge question, but what do you think needs to be done to tackle that?
Well, part of the problem is poverty. When you have people in impoverished situations like this, you get this aberrant behavior on their part. And the problem is that many of them feel that they've lost hope and are striking out sometimes against other individuals and sometimes other individuals like themselves and sometimes other individuals against them. But I don't want to get into a situation where we think this is unique to the black community, because you also have the European American or white community with white on white crime is around 80%, black on black crime is about 90%. And so it exists where there are other economic related issues, and many of them have to do with jobs and education.
Are there things you'd like to see in the justice system at the local, state, even federal level to try to keep people from ending up incarcerated for longer periods of time?
Oh, Oh, absolutely. More diversion projects that keep them out of the system and keep them productive and working, even if they have to be monitored somehow while in the community. I think what you see happening in the criminal justice system and correction system is this bipartisan initiative to reform the correction system. And I think they're right on the money in doing that. And our own, the DA's office here in Milwaukee is working on that as well. So continuing to move down that road and decriminalizing some of these offenses, misdemeanors and things like that, and as opposed to incarcerating. It costs more to incarcerate these people than educate them. So let's do something differently, and diversion is one of those policies or practices. And that's where we have to go with this. You've got to look at the policies and practices that result in these disproportionate numbers of people of color incarcerated.
So these numbers we're looking at are striking, depressing in some ways. Do you see signs of hope? Do you see things happening that you think are going to turn this around in the next 10 years, generation or two?
I think it's going to turn around in the next 5 years, actually, if, in fact, we continue down this road of reforming corrections and acknowledging the fact that job creation, job training, and education are going to be important to many of these communities. As you've seen communities around the country over the last few months just explode behind incidents involving black males, and the officials in those communities try to address this by talking about issues of education and job creation and employment as a solution to part of the problem, because it lifts people out of poverty and that impoverished state of mind.
If someone's out there thinking related to the mentor programs you talked about earlier, hey, maybe that's me, maybe I could be that mentor, who do they reach out to? How do they get involved?
I think there are a couple of areas for this. As I mentioned, 100 Black Men have been doing this for some time. That's one organization that I would reach out to immediately. Others, Running Rebels deals more with youth, and there are folks in that organization who would welcome mentors. The initiatives that are currently underway at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, we're in the process of putting something together that would involve all black men in Milwaukee, regardless of age. And mentors, when we talk about mentors, we're not simply saying that black men are the only ones who are able to mentor black boys. We're saying people who are interested in looking at the improving the quality of life and the success of black males are in a position to act as mentors.
Gary, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Gary Williams, Associate Professor of Educational Policy and Community Studies at UW-Milwaukee.
Coming up, we'll talk to the executive director of the Sixth Amendment Center about their new study on court-appointed attorney compensation in Wisconsin.